Cambridge International Examinations. Specimen Paper 2015. English as a Second Language. Listening Comprehension. Core. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready. Here is the exam. Questions 1 to 4. You will hear four short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than three words for each detail. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. Where does this conversation take place? B. What two things does the woman decide to buy?
Buy your fruit and vegetables here, everyone. No need to go to the expensive supermarket. You can get all you need here in your local market. Come and take a look. Buy some top-class peaches or green beans for your supper tonight. Good morning, madam. What can I get for you?
I think I'll just take this bunch of carrots, please.
No problem. Here you are. And how about some peas, all picked fresh today, or some new potatoes?
They do look good, but no thanks. But I will take those tomatoes. It's okay, you can put them in the same bag.
Buy your fruit and vegetables here, everyone. No need to go to the expensive supermarket. You can get all you need here in your local market. Come and take a look. Buy some top-class peaches or green beans for your supper tonight. Good morning, madam. What can I get for you?
I think I'll just take this bunch of carrots, please.
No problem. Here you are. And how about some peas, all picked fresh today, or some new potatoes?
They do look good, but no thanks. But I will take those tomatoes. It's okay, you can put them in the same bag.
Question 2. A. Which room is the student trying to find? B. Where exactly should the student go to find the room he needs? Give two details.
Excuse me, sorry to bother you, but can you help me? This is my first day at college and I'm really lost.
You'll soon get used to where everything is. This is the drama studio. But where do you want to go?
I'm trying to find the science lab. I have a physics lecture and I'm so late.
Well, you're heading in the right direction. Look, you see those stairs? Go up the stairs, then turn left for the art room and turn right for the science lab. The name is written on the door, so you can't miss it.
Oh, thanks so much. I'll have to rush. I'm so late. And for my first lecture of the year, too. Excuse me. Sorry to bother you, but can you help me? This is my first day at college, and I'm really lost.
You'll soon get used to where everything is. This is the drama studio. But where do you want to go?
I'm trying to find the science lab. I have a physics lecture and I'm so late.
Well, you're heading in the right direction. Look, you see those stairs? Go up the stairs, then turn left for the art room and turn right for the science lab. The name is written on the door, so you can't miss it.
Oh, thanks so much. I'll have to rush. I'm so late. And for my first lecture of the year, too.
Question 3. A. What does the new drink called Sun Drops have in it to keep you fit and well? B. Which flavour does the advert recommend if you want to change from the usual flavours?
Is it raining outside? No need to be miserable. Try our brand new drink, Sun Drops. Sun Drops will brighten your day, full of flavour, full of fun, and full of vitamin C for health. This is a fizzy drink with a difference. Sun Drops. Buy some today and make every day a sunny day. Sun Drops is also available in blueberry, so if you're fed up with boring old orange and lemon flavours, why not give it a go? Is it raining outside? No need to be miserable. Try our brand new drink, Sun Drops. Sun Drops will brighten your day, full of flavour, full of fun, and full of vitamin C for health. This is a fizzy drink with a difference. Sun Drops. Buy some today and make every day a sunny day. Sun Drops is also available in blueberry, so if you're fed up with boring old orange and lemon flavours, why not give it a go?
Question 4. A. Apart from taking a walk, what else does the speaker suggest the tourists do when they make their stop? B. When will the trip definitely be finished by?
Welcome aboard the pleasure boat Adventurer. First, let me tell you about the cruise. We're going to travel along the river, upstream, for an hour. Lots of opportunities for you to take photos and do some sunbathing. Then we'll dock and drop you off at a small village where you can stretch your legs. I really recommend that you visit the castle there. Please come back to the boat promptly after 45 minutes. The trip will last 3.5 hours altogether, and we will be back here at the jetty at some time between 2:30 and 3 o'clock. Now for some safety information. Welcome aboard the pleasure boat Adventurer. First, let me tell you about the cruise. We're going to travel along the river, upstream, for an hour. Lots of opportunities for you to take photos and do some sunbathing. Then we'll dock and drop you off at a small village where you can stretch your legs. I really recommend that you visit the castle there. Please come back to the boat promptly after 45 minutes. The trip will last 3.5 hours altogether, and we will be back here at the jetty at some time between 2:30 and 3 o'clock. Now for some safety information.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear question 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 5. You will hear a talk given by a woman who is organising an exhibition of items found in a 2,000-year-old Chinese tomb. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write 1 or 2 words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Good afternoon. I've come to tell you about a wonderful exhibition that we have been able to arrange here in our city. It's an exhibition of the Terracotta Army from China. We will have 316 items on show, including 10 terracotta warriors, or soldiers, 120 other figures, and almost 200 other items from the ancient tombs. Many of these have never before been put on display outside China. Let me start by telling you the story behind these world-famous warriors. It began more than 2,000 years ago with a powerful ruler called Qin Shi Huangdi. He was a very fierce leader, and there was much bloodshed during his rule. However, one positive outcome was that he managed to bring together 7 warring kingdoms and combine them into the one country we now call China. Qin was the very first emperor of China. Up until this time, it had been the tradition or custom, when the rulers died, to kill all the people who had served him in life so that they could be buried in his tomb with him. But Qin changed this cruel practice and instead arranged for an enormous army of life-sized soldiers made out of terracotta, a kind of clay, to be buried with him after his death. This was quite a change from what had happened before Qin's time. What is surprising is that each warrior was crafted by hand. It is believed it took only 2 years for these warriors, all 8,000 of them, to be made so beautifully. Even more incredible is the fact that the face of each warrior was unique. The weapons found with the soldiers are extremely interesting. Crossbows with arrows have been unearthed, as well as swords and spears, and they are all still very sharp and rust-free. They were covered in a layer of chromium, which protected them very well. As you can imagine, the biggest challenge has been transporting the delicate figures here from China. They had to be packed very carefully in purpose-built packing cases to make sure they could not move about, and then loaded into trucks. After this, the crates were transferred onto a special cargo plane for the second part of the journey. We're expecting around 150,000 visitors to the exhibition. The Terracotta Army exhibition in the British Museum in London made 2008 the most successful year ever for that museum. The first batch of tickets sold out so fast that the museum had to stay open until midnight at weekends, and even then, many hundreds of people were turned away. Well, I'm expecting our latest exhibition to be equally as popular. Make sure you book your tickets in advance. You can make your booking either online or over the phone. An event like this is a wonderful way to bring people and cultures together.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Good afternoon. I've come to tell you about a wonderful exhibition that we have been able to arrange here in our city. It's an exhibition of the Terracotta Army from China. We will have 316 items on show, including 10 terracotta warriors, or soldiers, 120 other figures, and almost 200 other items from the ancient tombs. Many of these have never before been put on display outside China. Let me start by telling you the story behind these world-famous warriors. It began more than 2,000 years ago with a powerful ruler called Qin Shi Huangdi. He was a very fierce leader, and there was much bloodshed during his rule. However, one positive outcome was that he managed to bring together 7 warring kingdoms and combine them into the one country we now call China. Qin was the very first emperor of China. Up until this time, it had been the tradition or custom, when the rulers died, to kill all the people who had served him in life so that they could be buried in his tomb with him. But Qin changed this cruel practice and instead arranged for an enormous army of life-sized soldiers made out of terracotta, a kind of clay, to be buried with him after his death. This was quite a change from what had happened before Qin's time. What is surprising is that each warrior was crafted by hand. It is believed it took only 2 years for these warriors, all 8,000 of them, to be made so beautifully. Even more incredible is the fact that the face of each warrior was unique. The weapons found with the soldiers are extremely interesting. Crossbows with arrows have been unearthed, as well as swords and spears, and they are all still very sharp and rust-free. They were covered in a layer of chromium, which protected them very well. As you can imagine, the biggest challenge has been transporting the delicate figures here from China. They had to be packed very carefully in purpose-built packing cases to make sure they could not move about, and then loaded into trucks. After this, the crates were transferred onto a special cargo plane for the second part of the journey. We're expecting around 150,000 visitors to the exhibition. The Terracotta Army exhibition in the British Museum in London made 2008 the most successful year ever for that museum. The first batch of tickets sold out so fast that the museum had to stay open until midnight at weekends, and even then, many hundreds of people were turned away. Well, I'm expecting our latest exhibition to be equally as popular. Make sure you book your tickets in advance. You can make your booking either online or over the phone. An event like this is a wonderful way to bring people and cultures together.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear question 6. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 6. You will hear 6 people talking about music. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list, A to G, which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. Speaker 1.
Music is a very important part of my life. I've been learning the violin ever since I was 6. I'm not very good, my sister's much better, but I still enjoy it very much. I've always been quite a shy person, and I think I express my feelings more openly when I'm playing. It's somehow more difficult for me to say what I mean. I listen to music, classical usually, almost all the time, when I'm on the bus or jogging in the park, when I'm at my desk working or having a bath.
Speaker 2.
Both my parents play in an orchestra, so I've always grown up with music. I play the piano quite well and also love playing the guitar while my younger sister sings. Music's probably the most important aspect of my life, but I'd prefer it to stay a hobby rather than having to earn a living by playing. I love listening to music at least as much as performing, but what I think I love most is moving to music when a beautiful tune is playing. You just can't beat that.
Speaker 3.
I spend most weekends at a gig because I'm in a band with a couple of friends. We don't really earn any money from our live performances, but that's okay, because the chance to meet lots of nice people is quite enough for us. Anyway, I suspect it wouldn't be so enjoyable if we were doing it for anything but fun. I'm certainly glad my dad made me carry on with guitar lessons. To begin with, I couldn't be bothered to play the guitar, but I changed my mind after playing in a school concert when everyone said how great I was.
Speaker 4.
I've never had a music lesson and I can't play any instruments, but I listen to music a lot. My preferences have expanded in the last few years. I used to listen only to pop, but an aunt took me to a festival one weekend and that set off a passion for Celtic folk music. Some of the old songs are just so moving. I've been listening to some recordings of famous operas and I'm going to my first live performance next week. I won't understand the words because it's in Russian, but I imagine the music will communicate the performer's feelings.
Speaker 5.
I had my first violin lesson at the age of 4, and now I also play the guitar and the piano. I tried the flute at one point too, but I haven't kept that up, as I'm really too busy with all my schoolwork. I've been lucky enough to go to performances by some of the top players in the world, and my goal is to find work as a violinist in one of the world's leading orchestras. I think you can convey feeling best through the violin. It can express any mood, from joy to sorrow, anger to peace.
Speaker 6.
I love going to live events and watching the performers as they play. I wish I was as good as most of them are. I can strum a guitar a bit, but I'm always reluctant to play in public. I love listening to recorded as well as live music. I usually listen to it on my phone and have a great selection of varied stuff on my playlist. If I'm feeling down, there are a few songs that have this amazing power to cheer me up. I think music really can move you in the most extraordinary ways.
Now you will hear the 6 speakers again. Speaker 1.
Music is a very important part of my life. I've been learning the violin ever since I was 6. I'm not very good, my sister's much better, but I still enjoy it very much. I've always been quite a shy person, and I think I express my feelings more openly when I'm playing. It's somehow more difficult for me to say what I mean. I listen to music, classical usually, almost all the time, when I'm on the bus or jogging in the park, when I'm at my desk working or having a bath.
Speaker 2.
Both my parents play in an orchestra, so I've always grown up with music. I play the piano quite well and also love playing the guitar while my younger sister sings. Music's probably the most important aspect of my life, but I'd prefer it to stay a hobby rather than having to earn a living by playing. I love listening to music at least as much as performing, but what I think I love most is moving to music when a beautiful tune is playing. You just can't beat that.
Speaker 3.
I spend most weekends at a gig because I'm in a band with a couple of friends. We don't really earn any money from our live performances, but that's okay, because the chance to meet lots of nice people is quite enough for us. Anyway, I suspect it wouldn't be so enjoyable if we were doing it for anything but fun. I'm certainly glad my dad made me carry on with guitar lessons. To begin with, I couldn't be bothered to play the guitar, but I changed my mind after playing in a school concert when everyone said how great I was.
Speaker 4.
I've never had a music lesson and I can't play any instruments, but I listen to music a lot. My preferences have expanded in the last few years. I used to listen only to pop, but an aunt took me to a festival one weekend and that set off a passion for Celtic folk music. Some of the old songs are just so moving. I've been listening to some recordings of famous operas and I'm going to my first live performance next week. I won't understand the words because it's in Russian, but I imagine the music will communicate the performer's feelings.
Speaker 5.
I had my first violin lesson at the age of 4, and now I also play the guitar and the piano. I tried the flute at one point too, but I haven't kept that up, as I'm really too busy with all my schoolwork. I've been lucky enough to go to performances by some of the top players in the world, and my goal is to find work as a violinist in one of the world's leading orchestras. I think you can convey feeling best through the violin. It can express any mood, from joy to sorrow, anger to peace.
Speaker 6.
I love going to live events and watching the performers as they play. I wish I was as good as most of them are. I can strum a guitar a bit, but I'm always reluctant to play in public. I love listening to recorded as well as live music. I usually listen to it on my phone and have a great selection of varied stuff on my playlist. If I'm feeling down, there are a few songs that have this amazing power to cheer me up. I think music really can move you in the most extraordinary ways.
That is the end of the short talks about music. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. You will hear Annabel, a student, asking John Morgan, a wildlife photographer, some questions about his career as part of a school radio programme. Listen to their conversation and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the talk twice.
Thank you for agreeing to answer some questions about being a wildlife photographer. Is it something you always wanted to do?
Not as a career, really. I was terribly bored at school, but went on to do a college course in business studies. Not at all related to what I would do later in life. What I did outside school hours was more meaningful. I had a passion for art and used photography to get reference material for my art.
Did you find it difficult to make the change from business to photography?
Well, I wasn't any good at painting, so I turned to photography and got into terrible debt after buying some top-of-the-range equipment. I was working full-time as a sales rep, selling biscuits, of all things, but spent many nights photographing foxes. I got some nice fox images, which were accepted by an agency.
You photograph all sorts of wildlife in many different parts of the world. Which is your favourite place for taking photographs?
Actually, I don't travel that often, though I am looking forward to a trip I've planned to the Antarctic next year. I prefer to concentrate on South Africa. I have a good relationship with the park's authorities, so I get to visit areas where there is plenty of interesting wildlife to photograph. I think India would be a wonderful place to photograph tigers. I'd love to go there.
How do you prepare before going on a trip?
If it's a new location, there's lots of research to be done. However, I leave planning the route to my support team. Reading up about the animals I'm going to photograph is always interesting, but it's usually best to go without too many fixed ideas. I do think about the photographs I want to take, though, and I write down plenty of ideas to give myself a clear objective.
And you've had several books published which are full of your amazing photographs. How long does it take to complete an assignment?
That depends. If I'm doing a travel feature, it might take a couple of months. I'm very proud of my book African Adventure, which has sold more copies than any of the others. That was put together in about 6 months, entirely from photographs I'd already taken. On the other hand, it took me about 2 years to take all the photographs I needed for Wildlife Safari.
You rarely do close-up studies of animals. Why is that?
Yes, I do try to avoid close encounters. Once I nearly trod on an enormous crocodile, but that doesn't worry me. Actually, taking photos of animals up close is bad for the animals because it causes stress, and animals that are uncomfortable don't make good pictures.
What do you find most satisfying about being a wildlife photographer?
I certainly enjoy the travelling, but you don't have to be a photographer to do that. I do very much like the idea that my pictures educate people who don't travel the world about the animals they'll never get the opportunity to see in the wild. Of course, a job has to provide you with an income. I'll admit to being comfortably well off, but that's not my incentive.
What is the best piece of advice you'd give to someone who wants to become a wildlife photographer?
There are more courses around than when I started. It's obviously a good idea to look into those. You'll learn all the technical stuff that way. I always found it useful to check out what established photographers were doing. There are often exhibitions you can visit. However, you can't beat getting loads of practice. Join a photographic club and take as many pictures as you can. And it's worth remembering that you don't have to wait until you can afford a very expensive camera.
Thank you very much, John, for talking to me.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Thank you for agreeing to answer some questions about being a wildlife photographer. Is it something you always wanted to do?
Not as a career, really. I was terribly bored at school, but went on to do a college course in business studies. Not at all related to what I would do later in life. What I did outside school hours was more meaningful. I had a passion for art and used photography to get reference material for my art.
Did you find it difficult to make the change from business to photography?
Well, I wasn't any good at painting, so I turned to photography and got into terrible debt after buying some top-of-the-range equipment. I was working full-time as a sales rep, selling biscuits of all things, but spent many nights photographing foxes. I got some nice fox images which were accepted by an agency.
You photograph all sorts of wildlife in many different parts of the world. Which is your favourite place for taking photographs?
Actually, I don't travel that often, though I am looking forward to a trip I've planned to the Antarctic next year. I prefer to concentrate on South Africa. I have a good relationship with the park's authorities, so I get to visit areas where there is plenty of interesting wildlife to photograph. I think India would be a wonderful place to photograph tigers. I'd love to go there.
How do you prepare before going on a trip?
If it's a new location, there's lots of research to be done. However, I leave planning the route to my support team. Reading up about the animals I'm going to photograph is always interesting, but it's usually best to go without too many fixed ideas. I do think about the photographs I want to take, though, and I write down plenty of ideas to give myself a clear objective.
And you've had several books published which are full of your amazing photographs. How long does it take to complete an assignment?
That depends. If I'm doing a travel feature, it might take a couple of months. I'm very proud of my book African Adventure, which has sold more copies than any of the others. That was put together in about 6 months, entirely from photographs I'd already taken. On the other hand, it took me about 2 years to take all the photographs I needed for Wildlife Safari.
You rarely do close-up studies of animals. Why is that?
Yes, I do try to avoid close encounters. Once I nearly trod on an enormous crocodile, but that doesn't worry me. Actually, taking photos of animals up close is bad for the animals because it causes stress. And animals that are uncomfortable don't make good pictures.
What do you find most satisfying about being a wildlife photographer?
I certainly enjoy the travelling, but you don't have to be a photographer to do that. I do very much like the idea that my pictures educate people who don't travel the world about the animals they'll never get the opportunity to see in the wild. Of course, a job has to provide you with an income. I'll admit to being comfortably well off, but that's not my incentive.
What is the best piece of advice you'd give to someone who wants to become a wildlife photographer?
There are more courses around than when I started. It's obviously a good idea to look into those. You'll learn all the technical stuff that way. I always found it useful to check out what established photographers were doing. There are often exhibitions you can visit. However, you can't beat getting loads of practice. Join a photographic club and take as many pictures as you can. And it's worth remembering that you don't have to wait until you can afford a very expensive camera.
Thank you very much, John, for talking to me.
That is the end of question 7 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers. Thank you, everyone.